is the Desperate Mothers Podcast. CJ Watson and the mothers of desperation discuss ongoing work behind the scenes of their sketch comedy channels and the upcoming web series, The Bunny Rabbit Tragedies. Bunny rabbits and vampires and onions living together? Oh my. Check out what these desperate motherfuckers are up to this week.
Yeah, we need a more catchy jingle. We need a jingle. We can have that that radio intro podcast, the radio intro, like, but we also need a catchy jingle.
You haven't commissioned any new fibers recently?
No, I've been trying to decide which ones to do, what I want. I might end up doing a few.
Are we rolling, or is this all being wasted?
We're rolling, so I guess we should tell everybody who we are and what we're doing. This is the Desperate Mothers Podcast. I'm CJ Watson.
I'm Jack Fisher.
I'm Jason Rice.
And we're trying to decide what we're going to talk about tonight. We're normally not very interesting people.
We could talk about the show some.
The show?
The show. The puppets.
The puppets. The puppets. The puppet show, which all this week, all we've been doing is kind of sitting here, some stuff drying and
curing.
Yeah. Not a whole lot well cured. Going. Not a whole lot going on this week. And that's about all I have to say about that.
That was a lot of dead air right there.
Well, I was thinking I've been fine tuning the script, but that's not really interesting to say. Oh, I was playing with some of the dialogue with Klaus and Dez and Harold and changing this around because some of it come across as pretty lame. But you can play with dialogue till the cows come home.
A writer's going to rewrite what he's written as long as you give him the opportunity to rewrite it.
And ultimately, it's all still going to suck or be great. You can't change it. I mean, you can get flowery with the words, but that's actually more towards the suck than anything else. No, we were talking about, Jason and I were talking about the measles outbreak last week at Disneyland. I believe that the apocalypse will start with the measles outbreak at Disneyland. We will call it the one final Disneyland attraction. Here begins the mouse apocalypse.
Stay off, it's a small world.
Oh, it is a small world. And Disney measles is going to spread. They come out in patches. They look like little Mickey heads.
Yeah.
All over the place. They say you sound like Goofy when you die. Your death rattle is Goofy-esque. Man, I kind of wish I could do a Goofy voice right now.
Gee, Max.
Then there's the Yeti-shaped outbreak on your back, hiding behind the shoulder blade.
Frozen?
Matterhorn.
Okay. Man, if I was more of a Disney fan or follower, that would have just come right to me. Yeah, that's a pretty good one, Jack. I'm sorry I didn't get it sooner.
The delivery was a little rusty, but the Yeti hiding on your back, behind your shoulder blades. Yeah.
You'll never see him.
Yeah.
You have to employ the aid of a friend, who was also probably going to die of the mouse measles. The mousels, the Disney mousels.
I had my MMR, so I'm good.
You'll be one of the few survivors.
So is it going to be the mouse apocalypse?
Mouse apocalypse. Yeah. It's going to start with the Mickey Mouse March, and it's going to end with the Silence of Humanity. Wow, this human race, they sure like their amusement parks. It'll be a dirty bomb. It goes off, filled with mouse measles, Disney measles.
And on that happy note,
we should probably move on to the ding-dongs.
So, yeah, interesting enough, we talked about this, and we've kind of been doing this in the show once in a while. We're going to compare the Reborn Hostess snack cake items to their leading competitor, the once ghetto Hat in Hand Sad Sack. Redheaded stepchild of snack cakes, Little Debbie, is now a main contender. I think Little Debbie's won the last two taste test challenges.
Now, you didn't do any snacking last week.
No,
we didn't.
Okay, because I missed last week, and I would be very bitter if I missed a podcast and you consumed Hostess and Little Debbie without me.
Well, tonight's one of my favorites, Ding Dongs. For me, Ding Dongs was a personal childhood favorite because the Ding Dong was wrapped in that silver tin foil, and they were like perfectly shaped hockey pucks. You open the box and you get one out. I mean, you could buy the Ding Dongs in the two-pack sleeves. It was nothing like the tinfoil-wrapped Ding Dongs for me. So right away, this pisses me off. Because we opened the Ding Dongs.
Disappointingly, neither brand has chosen to stay with the foil wrapper.
So we got the Little Debbie's Cocoa Cream, and she misspells cream in her cute Little Debbie way. And we've got the Hostess Ding Dong, which is an opaque white wrapper with Hostess printed on it. I guess it's... I've never had a plastic wrapper lie to me before, but there's always a first time. The one thing I noticed when I open them, though, it is not a perfectly shaped hockey puck. There's giant nooks and crannies in it, and it's misshapen, it's not even. My Ding Dong is already a lie.
Okay. So looking at the nutritional information, the Little Debbie serving size is 1, 12 per container. The Hostess serving size is 2, 6 per container. So they have the same numerical number of cakes. Numerical number, that might be redundant.
It might be. In some places, numerical doesn't necessarily mean number.
The two Hostess cakes together add up to 72 grams, and one Little Debbie cake by itself tanks in at 40 grams.
Oh, that would be 80.
Yes.
If you times 40 to buy two.
Or you could...
in a land where they have numbers.
You could go with the 36 grams.
Where numerical and numbers per Hostess mean the same thing?
Yeah, they don't always remember.
I know. Be careful, kids.
And then you look at the calories and the fat... Oh goodness, we have to do a little math here. That's 150 plus 15. That's going to be 165 calories for the Hostess versus 170 for the Little Debbie. So Little Debbie a little heavier, a little more calories. Calories from fat. Actually, this is a little bit of a departure from previous tastings. The Hostess actually has a higher fat content.
Oh, we might have a contender after all.
Might have a contender. 75 grams of fat in a cake for Hostess and 70 grams of fat for Little Debbie. Now, obviously, the higher the fat content, the tastier it's going to be.
Yeah, it is, because fat's tasty. That's why pigs are delicious.
That's why bacon... Pigs.
Have you ever seen a pig farmer? You know what they do most of the day? Just go out there and lick the pigs when no one's looking. Like ice cream cones.
All right. And they both claim to have a gram of protein per cake.
Because you're being gentle with the wrapper.
And they... Ooh, this is interesting. Hostess only claims possibly why they go with the two cakes. Two cakes... total has 1 gram of dietary fiber, and one cake by itself for Little Debbie has a gram of dietary fiber.
Oh, so they had to match the serving to get the same amount of fiber?
Yeah. Because if they had gone with one cake, you can't claim like 0.5 grams of dietary fiber.
Well then.
All right, so we have some tasty cake sitting in front of us. I think we should start stuffing... our pie holes.
So I noticed the Little Debbie cake seems to be at least uniformly the same height, but it is very much not a perfect circle. Little Debbie smells like chocolate. Ding Dong has a little bit of that familiar old Ding Dong chocolate waxy smell.
Yeah. And the chocolate covering is a little darker. The Little Debbie, a little bit more of a milk chocolate kind of brown color to it.
It feels like it's breaking down a little bit in my hand faster.
Yeah, the chocolate coating is flakier.
Yeah, it seems the Little Debbie chocolate coating is a little thinner.
Mm-hmm. So whatever this Hostess Ding Dong chocolate coating is, has more of it than the Little Debbie has.
All right, I can't wait any longer. I'm taking a bite.
Which one? Ding Dong first?
Ding
Dong first. Well, that's pretty decent. It looks like it has an even mix of cream throughout, and I didn't get any sugary granules. The chocolate held up. Nothing was overpowered. It was like a good mix.
I could taste the cake,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. But yeah, the chocolate didn't overpower the cake.
Everybody seemed to work together really well. All right, now the Little Debbie, which is all uniformly high, misshapen, and melting in my hand. I taste less chocolate, more sweet.
I think
no sugar granules, but the cake isn't as strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I taste more of the cream
mm-hmm.
than the cake.
But it looks like cream is dispersed evenly throughout.
Yeah. I think the Little Debbie cakes are actually two separate cakes with cream in the center.
Hmm.
Where the Ding Dongs look like they're injected.
Oh, I just pulled that apart, and it looks like you're totally right.
Yeah.
We'll have to freeze test one and see. Like, and Hostess is obviously injected in the cake. That ain't coming apart.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Hmm.
I don't know. These are pretty close.
I'm going to give it to the Ding Dong. Just my personal preference.
Well, the chocolate's stronger on the Ding Dong. It's one cake with the cream injected. And I don't get any sugar in the cream. It's more balanced. I hate to do it.
Yeah.
I do after, because being pissed off at whatever company brought the Hostess. And they lost the last two. But damn if the Ding Dong don't win.
Okay. Well, we do have a March 8th, 2015 Best Buy date. On
and it's
Ding
actually
Dong.
Fresh this time.
So I think that might be the first time we've actually gotten a fresh Hostess cake. Oh, my. The Little Debbie is only good for another couple of days.
Mm, well, that's the first, huh?
Yeah. Okay, so it's kind of going to come down to the price. The sticker price on the Hostess is $4. And the Little Debbie, the sticker price is $3.09.
Wow, that's like 20...
90 cents 20, difference.
Yeah. And like about 23% cheaper.
And, you know, I'm going to agree. I'm going to say that Hostess actually wins this one. I can taste the cake in addition to the chocolate and the cream. And with a Little Debbie, I'm just tasting the chocolate and the cream, not so much the cake.
Yeah, the cake's there to deliver the other two, and the chocolate doesn't quite live up to the Hostess chocolate on this one. It's the thinner chocolate like on the Swiss rolls. Where on the Swiss rolls it really pops, and here, not so much. So, even though they're not individually wrapped like hockey pucks, even though they're not perfectly shaped hockey pucks, the Ding Dong still deliver the Ding Dong taste.
It's still a Ding Dong.
It makes sense that the Little Debbie Cocoa Creams would be two individual cakes, too, because as we were talking before the show started, they did the zebra cakes, and they do things like that all the time, and that's what they do. So
yeah.
They put cake together, and then they cover it with a thin layer of frosting. Okay, so there you go, Hostess. Maybe you want to support the next podcast. We could use a sponsor. I mean, we will still be unbiased reviewing you. And we will still call on your crap. But, you know, if you want to send us some cakes, we're down. We'll eat them.
If a company starts sending us merchandise to consume on the show, we're definitely going to start doing beer tasting.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to disclaimer everything, though.
Because we don't want our professional unbiasedness to be affected.
Well, we should incorporate a regular segment into the show. We can have, like, Jack's Beer Minute. Or Beer 30. 30 seconds of beer. It's just us drinking the beer for 30 seconds. And then afterwards, we'll talk about it. Beer 30. It's time to go get a snack, folks. We're going to be drinking beer for 30 seconds.
That dead silence you hear? That's them drinking beer.
Oh, it'll be entertaining. Just maybe not for the people listening.
Yeah.
So other than the mousepocalypse this week, and the lack of bunny movement.
Well, we had a spectacular plane crash.
Oh, the one that caught on on all those dash cams?
Yeah, the dash cam.
Where was that? Indonesia?
Yeah, it was in the Far East. Was it in China?
Taipan? I don't actually watch the news, so I have no idea.
Yeah.
I learn my news when I come here.
Hmm.
Yeah, when the mousepocalypse hits, you're going to find out too late.
Yeah.
We'll be making jokes, but we'll be covered with Mickey Mouse-shaped rashes.
But I'll be fine, because I've had my MMR.
That's true.
You guys will be dying, and I'll just be like, hey, sucks to be you.
You guys aren't very funny this week. It's not much different from last week, but you should try a little harder. And quit sweating all over the place. Jack's trying to pull up CNN on the slo-fi.
We could talk about the Super Bowl.
Why? It went perfectly.
Almost.
Well, the right team won.
Okay.
So there's not much to talk about there.
So no love for no love for the Seahawks?
It was the Seahawks versus the New England Patriots. It was a tight game all the way around. Looks like the Seahawks were going to pull off one of their...
It was going to be a spectacular last 30-second win. They were 2 yards from the goal line. First down. On the first down, they throw an interception to the Patriot. Who, of course, they took the ball, did a play, went to a knee, and ran out the clock.
Well, it was more than that. I mean, the Seahawks are known for insane last 10-minute drives, like turning it around. Like Elway at the height of his career.
Well, they did a spectacular
Manning
comeback.
Before his arm injury. It's a throw the ball, get the yards, throw the ball, get the yards, force a goal, and just defying the other team. I mean, just doing what they couldn't do all game, all sandwiched down to the last 10 minutes, and it looked like it was going to happen again. And so they get the ball, and it's on the one. After the spectacular ball pops up into the air where you think it's going to land on the ground, it bounces off the receiver's legs.
The greatest reception in the history of the NFL.
The greatest instance of luck in the history of the NFL.
It was still. It may have been the luckiest, but it was also the greatest reception. I mean, you will never see anything like that happen again.
Except, I think that happened like 3 times this season.
It was not
but
exactly like that.
You'll never see it happen again.
Right.
And you'll never see it happen again in a Super Bowl.
Maybe. So the ball bounces, like, hits the guy's hands, bounces up, he falls down. The ball comes down, doesn't hit the ground, hits his legs.
He was spinning like a breakdancer.
Uh-huh.
Bobbling the ball in the air as he spun, and he manages to pull it down and make the reception.
So catches the ball, and you're like, oh, Jesus, really? They set up the next play, and it's another short pass. They get to the one, it goes down. And the coach calls the play. Now, it's a goal line defense. At the one, you set up for the goal line. So you got, like, all of your big guys in a line trying to make a wall to let you not get past. So, you know, normally if all you need is a yard, you line up and you try to push through. You try to hand the ball off, do a run, just jump over the other guys and go down and try to get a yard or so. In the middle of the field, though, you don't do that. On a second and one, you try a short slant or something. And then if that doesn't work, then you try to power through. It's the Super Bowl. He tried, the coach called a short pass. Well, this, on the New England team, this rookie Butler just blazes in out of nowhere and totally body checks, manhandles the Patriot receiver. This guy's up in the air, boom, knocks him down, grabs the ball, gets out of the end zone to avoid the safety, and he's down on the one. Now, when you line up like that, your quarterback is in the end zone. If you get tackled, okay, so what was the score? 28 to 24. It was really tight. Yeah, 28-24. It was a 4-point game. This is really important to know that's a 4-point game because a safety is worth 2 points.
Yeah.
And a field goal is worth 3. Now, since your quarterback's going to get the ball in the end zone, and if you get crushed in the end zone, that's 2 points to the other team, plus you got to kick off to them. If they get the ball after getting 2 points and they get it within the 30-yard line, they're in range for a field goal. In 10 seconds, they could turn the game around and win. That's when the encroachment heard round the world happened. Yes, one of the players known for crossing the neutral zone, like Star Trek, right? On the line of scrimmage. He's like all amped up, going to crush this quarterback, going to get that ball in the end zone, get that 2 points, make that thing happen, right? Did not happen. He encroached in the neutral zone, which incurred a 5-yard penalty, put the ball back on the 6. Now the Patriots have to do is take a knee, and they're at the 1. That was it. To me, that was the worst thing that happened to the Seahawks. Because if you know the Seahawks, you've been watching them pull their ass out of the fire all season long. That encroachment sealed the deal. You saw the Seahawks deny offside kicks. In the same game you saw them, right?
Yes.
So they can do, they worked miracles the last minute. They gave the game away themselves. And screw them for doing so. I don't care. There you get. That's what you get, Marshawn Lynch. Shout out to Skittles. Shout out to Skittles.
It was a great game. It was intense. It was back and forth. You had comebacks. You had amazing receptions. You had bonehead plays. It had everything.
It was the best Super Bowl game in a long time. Shout out to Skittles. Maybe Marshawn Lynch can do a Skittles commercial where he actually wins the Super Bowl.
That would be beneficial.
He eats a Skittle, and the coach calls a different play. There you go. There's your shout out to Skittles, Marshawn. So, yeah. Okay, what did you want to talk about the Super Bowl?
I think we just did.
So, I was happy that the Patriots won. I mean, they're a dynasty. They have good players. I don't like Tom Brady. I don't like Belichick. I don't care, but they've been a solid team the whole year. They've been a solid team for the past 9 years, you know? You don't just beat that with a one-off or two-off team. I mean, the Seahawks, Pete Carroll's a great coach, but who knows where they're going to be next year. I mean, they've got, I think, a tenuous grasp on how great they are. Because it's just all the players coming together, you know. And we don't live in a society in an era in the sport where the same players are going to be on the same team for 5, 6, 7 years. You know, they changed that up, and it changed the chemistry on the team. So they got a team that works this year. They had a team that worked last year. Who knows what the team's going to be like next year? You don't know until the first game of the season. You can't even tell in preseason because nobody wastes their talent in the preseason games. That's a ridiculous thing to do. Here, multi-million-dollar player, take the ball and chance getting hurt. So I guess if you're a Seahawk fan, the frustration level is pretty high.
Yeah, I'm not really a Seahawks fan. I just, you know, I didn't want to root for the Patriots. So.
Yeah, they hurt a lot of people on their way to the top, the Patriots. But last year, the Seahawks beat Denver in the Super Bowl, and that game was just atrocious.
Yeah, that was bad.
You know, the fumble touchdown on the very first play. It still hurts me. I mean, because Manning's better than that. That could have went better. So we were talking at work about things that make us frustrated, and I was talking about different levels of frustration and when you finally give up on something and when how frustrated you have to be to blow your top. And we should have a decent or a popular kind of formula.
That was cool.
Oh, the plane crashed. The plane crashed. Yeah, that was crazy. Where did that go down in?
Taiwan.
Taiwan.
Yeah.
What did I say? Taipan?
Yeah, close enough.
A few lettered off.
They're both in Asia.
Still, the dash cam thing is amazing, you know? I mean, in America, we don't have the dash cams the way they do in a lot of parts of the world.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you get all that fun YouTube video of all the plane crashes and everything.
Plane crashes,
car meteors. Meteors, oh. Meteors. Oh, that the Russian dash cams of that meteor that came down, that was amazing.
Pretty phenomenal.
Kind of shed light on that one meteor.
The Tagonska.
Yeah.
Yeah, dash cams. I'm in favor of them.
We should have
more of them. Yeah.
I mean, they should put them in by, you don't want to say by law, because Americans hate law. Americans hate anything that you want.
If you make it a law, they'll rebel against it and rip them all out.
That's true. But you know what would make Americans put dash cams on their car? Insurance brakes.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
You know, okay, so the dash cam cost you $100, so it'll give you $200 off your insurance.
Well, they have the one insurance company that like has the little GPS thumb drive transducer that you
Monitors your driving habits.
Monitors your driving habits and gives you a discount if you're a safe driver.
So, yeah, if you get a discount for having your dash cam.
There's a precedence here.
Yeah.
There's a precedence. Give us dash cams. Oh, charge us for the dash cams. Or just give us a break.
Like, well, if they charge us $100 for the dash cam and then give us $100 a year off our insurance the second year, we make $100. The first year, the dash cam's free.
Pays for itself.
Yeah. And then better, when you have an accident, you can actually prove what happened. That streamlined the insurance stuff.
Yeah, that's you know, that's why they're doing it in Russia, because you know, if they
had a lot of fraud, with
they can't prove it. It's going to go against them.
So that's pretty cool. We need to do that. So the plane crash in Taiwan was caught on a dash cam. The stills were amazing. The fact that you know the plane went down like that. I mean, sad. What, 31 people died?
It was a tragic loss of life.
But
it looked spectacular.
Yes.
I imagine not from the inside.
There were survivors. There were survivors on the plane. They were very lucky. And the river that it crashed into was shallow, so they were able to retrieve the flight recorders and everything quickly.
So you wonder if the pilot had thoughts of being like that hero pilot?
No, they barely had time to do anything.
Yeah.
There are some early reports that it may have been pilot error that led to this, that they...
Like he was taking a selfie?
No, there's a possibility...
Texting while flying.
There's a possibility that they had engine trouble, and when they went to shut off the engine,
he shut off the wrong engine. I read that too.
Yeah.
I mean, once you like have that kind of engine trouble, I mean, it you freak out. I mean, was it shortly after takeoff?
Oh yeah, it was immediately after takeoff.
I mean, the
worst possible time you can have an engine failure. They had an engine failure, and it may have been compounded by pilot error after that.
But even so, you know, was it a twin prop engine?
Yeah, you lose half your engines. The aircraft is going to start to behave oddly. It's going to yaw. It's going to...
Especially on takeoff, which is the most dangerous part of the flight.
Yes. Yeah, they had a little margin for error. And if there was additional pilot error, then it just happened at the wrong time.
So, yeah, that's tragic and sad. But the video was cool.
Tragic and sad. And spectacular.
And spectacular, yeah. It was spectacularly horrific. I mean, I would be freaked out. I mean, there was a car that was hit by the plane.
Yeah. It was a taxi, yeah.
And they survived, right? People inside?
Yes, the people in the cab survived.
So that's good. Man, crazy. Think about a plane coming down and hitting your taxi.
I'd kind of bring me my brown trousers.
All my trousers are brown, even the ones that I'm not wearing anymore. I don't know how that happened. So I was talking at work about frustration levels and when stuff pisses you off, and we should have an accurate gauge, an accurate way to gauge how frustrating things are, you know. And I think that the people who write technical manuals, because it's a technical job, you know, and you read a technical manual, it doesn't make sense. I think the people that write technical manuals have this secret formula for coming up with, like, how frustrating a manual should be. And there's this gauge, a range of it. And they make it so it crosses cultural and linguistic boundaries. And I hypothesize that this is called the international... This guide is made up of what they call international frustration units, IFUs, or FUs for short. So you can actually deduce how frustrating a manual is by how many times you say FU in executing it.
Now, is there an objective way to measure FUs?
Well, I was thinking about there should be an objective way to measure FUs, because if you're a hothead, you're going to say FU a whole lot more than someone who's, like, grounded. Someone who's got...
level-headed, calm.
Yeah, yeah, so, and someone, especially someone Zen who's got master. Their Zen. Yeah, yeah, Zen masters aren't going to FU that much at all, right?
So that's a fairly subjective unit.
Except that I think I've come up with a way. I mean, you know, you can roughly gauge FUs. If you think you're a grounded person, you know what the international frustration units are on something by how often you lose it or not. But, you know, some people are real hotheads. But I think that we could make a device that measures your international frustration unit level by modifying a blood pressure monitor.
I was going to say, we're obviously talking about a blood pressure cuff.
Right, right. Or a heart rate monitor. You know, something similar. You know?
Although, you know, the same people that have problems controlling their vocabulary probably are likewise susceptible to blood pressure spikes.
Well, they get frustrated easier. That's obvious.
Yeah. So even then, it's dependent on the observer.
It is. So then it becomes more important that we measure our own frustration levels. And so all we have to do is convert a blood pressure monitor into an FU monitor. And then have that, like, on an armband where other people can read. And you scale it from 0 to 100. So you take the actual blood pressure readings, and then you apply a scale of 0 to 100. And you got to get a baseline for it. But blood pressure can do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you then convert that, and then everyone has their own frustration level displayed on their armband. And you know when to leave fuckers alone.
Well, I think I can tell when my coworkers are pissed off.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop me from fucking with them, but...
Well, I'm not saying it's not necessarily going to stop anybody from fucking with anyway. It might actually compel you to try to raise your coworker's frustration level.
Yeah, because my FU level is at, like, 60 all the time, so...
Yeah, if we did it on a scale to 100, you know, some people, you know, they put the frustration monitor on, you know, it scales quickly to 100 and then it drops down to their baseline. I know some people that live at 90.
Well, and the people that, you know, are down there in the fives and the tens, mm-hmm. you know, you just want to see, can I get them to get up there?
It would be awesome.
Can I get them to 50? Can I get them 60?
Someone should do a Kickstarter for that.
Yeah.
That would be great. Measure the frustration levels.
And the wearing your heart on your sleeve.
You would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or your top. You know, it needs to be like an atom bomb explosion sign that fills up. Or you get to a certain level and you got a danger.
Biohazard blinking.
This one's close. They're like, hey, Bob, why don't you, I lost that report you gave me. I'm going to need another copy. I know you said you deleted it because I told you I had it, but it's gone. Why is your eye filling with blood?
Get out.
But if you don't have one of our not yet realized frustration level monitors, you can roughly go by how many FUs people exclaim while they're working on something. I think you have to magnify that by 10, because in the workplace, if you let an FU slip, it's magnified by 10 than if you do at home. Because at home, I let a lot more FU slip. I have a lower frustration tolerance.
That's interesting, because I think I drop the F-bomb more at work than I do at home.
Well, I'm used to working with the public.
Yeah, so
you kind of have to watch it.
I wouldn't exactly say I'm insulated from customers.
Right. But your customers kind of have no choice either. They have to be there.
Mm.
They can't take their business elsewhere.
That's true. We are the only game in town.
But if you work in retail or food service or any place like where you actually deal with customers that can easily and readily take their business elsewhere, I think a single FU in that instance is a lot more heavy than one where pretty much FU is the word of the day.
Now, I thought that Lisa's opinion of customers was fairly healthy for working in the retail business, a bookstore. You know, she would have those customers that were absolutely convinced that they could dangle the threat of, I'm going to call your district manager or something. And her attitude was always, yeah, go ahead. And, you know, if it pissed the customer off to the point where they never came back, that was bonus.
Yeah, well, she didn't work in a real retail environment.
I'll make sure she never hears you say that.
I worked in the grocery stores. And if someone went to your district manager, they made sure you personally apologized to them. And they often shipped you off to another store.
Hmm.
You know, if she had worked in that environment, I don't think she would have been saying that to a customer. I have seen many veteran managers moved from one store to another just to get them away from a single customer.
Mm-hmm.
In the grocery business, a customer is calculated to be worth X amount of dollars to the company over their lifetime. And that is valued much higher than the opinion and sanity of any one of his employees. Well, it's a very different dynamic.
I guess so.
And I worked in bookstores. I know that attitude. I would tell customers in bookstores, no, sorry. I know, this sucks. This totally sucks. Can't help you. What? You want to kick my ass? I think it's time for you to leave now. I had one customer threaten to kick my ass because we wouldn't return a book of his because it didn't have the receipt and it looked damaged. It was, if I thought, hey, you bought it there, I would have, but I couldn't take it back. And I just had a mandate come down from management. You know, when you work at a bookstore, the profit margin's pretty slim. You know, most of the bookstores went out of business.
Yeah.
So I couldn't take it back, you know, and I'm sorry, I can't take it back. You lying piece of shit. I'm going to come over that counter and beat your ass. Okay, dude, one, I outweigh you by like 50 pounds. And two, no, you're not. And three, I'm not changing my mind.
We have video cameras.
And I peek around the corner and two of the supervisors, they're not coming to my aid. They're just kind of looking and kind of snickering. You motherfuckers.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time I thought, wow, it'd be kind of fun to see Charles get his ass kicked.
Watch what Charles does now.
How long till he cries?
I don't think that would happen. I just think it would be amusing.
Did they point and laugh when the guy left?
No, then when the guy left, they came over to me. Well, they kind of laughed, yeah. They didn't point, but like, yeah, he really went off. Like, yeah, thanks a lot. So, It was a very different dynamic in the bookstore, because once you made that sale, you wanted to keep that sale sold, you know? And if you couldn't help someone, you couldn't help someone. The grocery business, though, is really different.
I can see where the grocery business would be different, because most customers will shop at the same store week after week, multiple times a week, spend hundreds of dollars every mm-hmm. time they visit.
Yeah, and that's why it was pressed upon us that a customer was worth X amount of dollars over the lifetime, their lifetime, because they will tend to be creatures of habit and go to the same store. So you don't piss them off.
Yeah.
You get this, you do this, you be respectful. If you can't be respectful, you either get fired or get moved to another store. And you be respectful despite their lack of respect, you know? You're not there necessarily to have your ego stroked. You're there to get paid by the hour and perform for the company. And that's why I went back to college. So I can do this. And eat ding dongs.
Living the dream.
That's right, baby. Puppets in a garage eating a ding dong.
That sounds like the plot for a gay porn.
It does. Is that ding dong filled with cream? Yeah, it is. Oh, yeah. Don't get any on you. Oh, too late. Cue porn music. So, yeah, that's fun stuff. Jason was telling us about a game he was playing, so he's a gamer.
Yep.
Yep, playing a game called Yakuza 4. And it's very Japanese, like all the voice acting is in Japanese. There's no English.
So it's like English. A port or a straight Japanese version of
it's
the game?
It's a straight Japanese import, okay. Basically. It's got English subtitles, but all the dialogue is Japanese. And it's a very convoluted story, which most Japanese stories are for Western audiences.
So Yakuza is about the Japanese mafia?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just like running around and beating up Yakuza, so it's fun for me.
Is it a fight game or is it a shoot 'em up game?
It's fighting.
First person or third person?
Third person.
Third person.
Grand Theft Auto style, open world?
It's got some open world, not Grand Theft Auto style. You're not fighting all the time, and you can't just beat the crap out of anybody you want to. Fights pop up or present themselves as you're running through the streets, and then you fight three or four different guys. But it's an interesting game. I wouldn't say it's a good game, but it's an interesting game.
So you're playing this on a PC, on
a tablet?
I'm playing
on the PlayStation.
PlayStation 3.
Yeah. I'm not cool enough to have the PlayStation 4 yet.
But it was free with the PlayStation Plus?
Yeah. PlayStation Plus gives you 2 free games a month. And I got Yakuza 4 free and Thief. So I'm trying to get through Yakuza 4 so I'll have room for the next free games that come.
So the point is you're fighting against the Yakuza? Or are you a Yakuza?
You play different characters. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you're fighting other Yakuza. Sometimes you're fighting cops. At one point you're breaking out of prison.
So you play different characters. It changes point of view?
Yeah, it changes point of view.
So do you actually know what's happening in the story?
Apparently, 25 years ago, there was a hit on a Yakuza boss.
Uh-huh.
And you're trying to find out what really went down and who plotted this whole thing out. And it's having ramifications now, this 25-year-old hit. Is having ramifications in the Yakuza now.
Okay.
that's about as much storyline as I could really gather.
I've been playing, I finished up the main mission for Grand Theft Auto 5 this week while I was taking breaks on working on the Bunny Rabbits. You come home exhausted, you fire up the video game, and the next thing you know, you're doing a few missions and it's time to go to bed. But Grand Theft Auto 5 is Grand Theft Auto 5. You know, you play three different characters. It's third person because I have it for the Xbox 360. Though I did hear that the Xbox One version has some first-person perspective. Sounds kind of neat.
Yeah.
And I like the FPS. I kind of like to go all Grand Theft Auto Sandbox first-person. But I still have other games to play. I did like this Grand Theft Auto 5 a lot more than I thought I was going to, especially at the beginning. Wasn't a big San Andreas fan. You know, I like how big the world was, but didn't get into it so much. Grand Theft Auto 4 I thought was amazing. Liked the story, liked the DLC, liked the main character, Nico?
Yeah, Nico.
So there was a lot of stuff to like about Grand Theft Auto 4, and I kind of wish they just kept making more adventures for it. But Patrick McCreary makes an appearance in Grand Theft Auto 5, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Other than that, it was pretty straightforward.
Now, who was your favorite character to play?
In Grand Theft Auto 5?
Yeah.
I liked Michael DeSanta.
Okay.
The hood gone undercover and then come back out. You know, Trevor was kind of crazy.
See, I liked Trevor. I'd drive around and I'd set my radio to the punk station.
Uh-huh.
And I'd just do crazy shit.
Trevor's hardcore crazy. I like Trevor. I thought they were all pretty likable, though.
Yeah.
I mean, Trevor for the crazy psychopathness. I think Michael, because he tried to play the middle ground the best, even though he let his criminal personality get the best of him sometimes. And then Franklin. Franklin was pretty cool. He was trying to better himself as a hood.
Well, better himself is a relative term, but
yeah. Trying to be a more responsible hood. You know, not like crazy like his buddy Lamar. I hated Lamar.
Yeah.
He's like one of those hood guys that just bring you down. They don't let you go all Scarface.
Lamar was that guy who got you in trouble.
Yeah.
No matter what you did, your buddy got you in trouble.
And then blamed you for being there. That wouldn't have happened if you didn't like acknowledge the trouble I got you in. So I like that. I solved that. I did the assassination missions where I got like $2 billion for each character. So I did the stock market playing. I can't wait for the DLC on that. That'll be fun. I'm not entirely sure. I'm not going to get the Xbox One and play it through someday. I feel like I'm abandoning the bunnies, though, every time I don't spend my day stitching their face together.
Well, how close are you to being done with your season one characters?
Pretty damn close. So close that I kick myself for not. Like I said, all their parts are right in this room. All their parts are in this room.
Are you happy with your noses?
I am. Well, you see the brown guy up there? He's the final.
Yeah.
The final design. I am happy with him. His ears need shaved. His pupils need to be put on. The noses are all more handmade than that one, but I like the design. So that's where we're going with season one.
We're close, man.
Yeah. And Harold's beak sitting over there all dry, waiting for paint and glue to be put on his face. So, yeah. So close. Gonna have to cast soon.
So we've got some cons coming up. Are there any that we might have a show in the can for?
Well, the two close big ones are in April, and that's pushing it too close. I mean, it's already February. And
yeah, I think
shit needed to be paid for by now. And I was talking to the guys at WonderCon this last week. I think I told Jason. I was talking to the guys at WonderCon, and they said they'll probably fit me in on a short list, and if table comes up, I can get it. But even though it's cheap, I'm thinking I'm going to let it pass because we really need to focus on getting these episodes up and done, yep, not on getting ready for a con. So I want to get the episodes up before I get ready for a convention, and that means pushing back even Wizard World, which is at the end of April. Wizard World Las Vegas, which is I was really interested in going to, because we have friends out in Vegas we could stay with. You know, we stay with Danny out there. It'd be great to see him. But Sacramento's coming up this summer.
Yeah.
It's not too far away. It's 5.5 hour trip.
Mm-hmm.
We could definitely drive there.
And when is it?
I want to say June.
Okay. June's very possible.
But Wizard World has a couple more cons that are within driving distance. And then there's smaller cons. Long Beach is coming up in March, the Comic Expo, and that's way too close. But then at the end of the year, they got the Long Beach Con, and I think it's September. So we're going to have to just...
September, you should have an entire season.
Oh, yeah, and we should be working on
number two.
Not only that, but get the other stuff going, too. You know, the French Onion sketches, some of the other sketch stuff, and possibly the zombie...
Yeah.
Film. Again, the zombie film I want to tease with a character that gives you clues about the science, the pseudoscience.
I call bullshit on your science.
The pseudoscience behind the zombie apocalypse and the zombie virus. So I've got a character named Johnny Z. He calls himself Johnny Z, and he's a conspiracy theorist who believes the government is covering up zombie outbreaks. So all of his videos are teasers, and they're referenced by the characters in the zombie movie. So right after season one of the Bunny Rabbit Tragedies, I want to start work on that. Get the season one Bunny Rabbit Tragedies done. We'll do the promo for The Hopping Dead and see if we have any takers. Maybe even fly as a Kickstarter. And then go into the YouTube teasers for Zombie Weekend. So we've got stuff planned out for the next few months.
Zombie Weekend sounds like
it's just the working title.
Happy.
It is. Like, I'm going to take the weekend and have a vacation with zombies.
Weekend. Woo! Weekend at Bernie's.
What are you going to do this weekend? Man, I'm going to Zombie Island. I'm going to fucking hunt some zombies. I got my zombie hunting permit ready to go. That sounds like a bad fucking movie right there. You'll probably come up with the entire plot for that in no time. You're like a... House of the Dead. You ever see House of the Dead?
I played the game.
They did a movie.
Was it Yul Bull?
Yes.
That's why I didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah. Capable of... Well, no. All his movies are terrible. Yeah. He's the one who did Blood Rain, right?
Yes.
Oh, those movies were terrible. Damn. All four of them? Yeah. Did he do four of them?
There were four?
Yeah.
I saw one, and I went...
Yeah, he did House of the Dead, and
I wanted Blood Rain to be good.
Well, of course. I mean, you want a badass TNA chick movie to be awesome, and it wasn't. You know, you want Blade with a hot chick.
Yeah.
Blade the Vampire Hunter with a hot chick, like Buffy with TNA.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I love Sarah Michelle Gellar.
It's hard not to.
But she doesn't got much in the way of TNA.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Well, I like the petite myself, but it doesn't translate well to film unless you were pushing and squeezing and squirting stuff out of, like, too tight clothing. Right?
It's, yeah, I'm thinking about pushing and squeezing stuff now, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, she got the little boobies. You push those up and squeeze those out. And then the high hip kind of thong thing happening. You can make something work out of that. She could have been Blood Rain.
She had the perfect balance of the kind of innocent doe-eye with the badass kind of deep waters. Anyhow.
No, I don't think so. I never got the innocent doe-eyed from Sarah Michelle Gellar. Yeah. Probably comes back to the Cruel Intentions thing, but she, you know, Reese Witherspoon, maybe innocent doe-eyed, not Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, I never got innocent from her.
I got blonde, I got young, I got petite, but innocent.
All right. You weren't seeing the innocence?
No.
Wasn't feeling it.
All right.
No, feeling a lot of other things when I watch Sarah Michelle Gellar, but Innocence ain't one of them.
So speaking of attractive actresses in big productions, how about Jupiter Ascending?
That looks so terrible.
Terrible.
It's Mila Kunis.
It's got spaceships.
And Channing Tatum.
Shit blows up.
Stuff blows up.
Channing Tatum.
Did you see the explosions?
Shit blows up. Channing Tatum, shit blows up.
So it's White House down in space. Is that where we're going? We got Channing Tatum. We got shit blowing up. Done. Does that sell tickets? Is that it? Then it's got all the acting talent of Mila Kunis.
Yeah.
So that shit's going to be deep right there. Like Sarah Michelle Gellar deep.
I want to see.
What do you mean I'm a vampire slayer? I mean a princess.
It may not win some Oscars, but for what it is, it will probably be pretty good.
Well, it is a Wachowski Brothers.
Yeah.
And it is another The World Isn't What You Think It Is movie. You know, instead of Neo being the one in the computer world, it's Mila being the princess in an interstellar space dynasty.
What more could you ask for? Spaceships, visual effects, blowing stuff up.
Sean Bean's in it, too.
I need nipples.
Yeah?
And not Channing Tatum's.
I don't know, that could happen. Well, there's somebody called Tuppence Middleton?
Two pence? What's this? How's it spelled?
Tuppence.
It's Tuppence.
Her parents named her Two Pence. Sadly, they knew that's all she was worth.
That's mean.
We hope our daughter grows up to be a prostitute and she makes at least two pence a shot.
She will never find love.
Oh. It looks like two pence. I've seen it. Two pence. And that's money in, like, England land. Right?
Yes.
How many pence is two?
I have no clue.
How much is two? How much is two pence?
How many pence is two?
That's two. Yeah. But I'm sure a pence is, like, is a pence a penny?
I think so.
It's English for a small amount of change.
Like two pennies? It's like a generic term. So it's like two pennies. Like, I don't know.
Okay, so you're hating the Jupiter Ascending.
I heard it opened at Sundance. Not so good.
I don't care. People at Sundance want something
artsy and deep.
Yeah.
And I just want to see spaceships and stuff blowing up.
Shit blows up.
It was ridiculous to open that at Sundance. What were they expecting? Maybe this. Maybe they want people to talk about it like this. Like, can you believe the audacity of them opening it at Sundance where people expect 95-minute talk fest with a single shot, poorly lit, but loud as hell? I can hear that old man drink his tea. I think he farted. Give that man the Oscar. Okay, no, I'm curious. I have to see it. I have to see it. But the special effects these days are getting overwhelming. You know, I'm not buying it when they fly through New York City and tear half of it down. Like in The Avengers.
Yeah.
You know.
The Avengers was awesome.
It was awesome.
Shit blows up.
Without Channing Tatum or Mila Kunis. So right there, they should have got the Oscars.
Hulk beat up Loki.
Okay.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. And Thor.
There is a show coming out sometime this year. They've been very secretive about when. They just say to release 2015. on Sci-Fi Channel, which is based on the series of books by James S.A. Corey. The series is called The Expanse. The first book in print was called Leviathan Awakes.
Oh, okay.
Amazing set of books. I am so excited about the television show. Can't wait to see it. And I'm
haven't read it.
Amazing.
Know nothing about it.
Amazing set of books. Lots of good space battle, and they talk about physics, the physics of flight in space, and trajectories and elliptical courses and intercepting.
Oh, I've heard you talk about this before. Yeah, because in space you don't fly so much as
you don't fly straight.
Maneuver around gravities.
Everything in space is happening in an elliptical orbit around something.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, the idea when I first realized that when people fly off planet, like in our actual physical universe, it's not as magical as it seems. They're trying to just slingshot off planet.
Yeah.
The only thing I know about space is no one can hear you scream.
Well, Sigourney Weaver.
Unless you're wearing a helmet
and your mic,
a radio transducer, and so they could hear you scream if they had a receiver tuned to the frequency of your transmitter.
I could have just a short like FM broadcaster and make sure everybody in the whole universe hears you scream eventually, just not like when you scream.
Yeah.
AM band scream radio. Death radio.
I don't think Ridley Scott was thinking that when he came up with the, or his PR people, media guys.
It was a good tagline.
It was a good tagline. Like a good tagline.
Death rattle radio.
CG's babbling about something I don't understand.
Yeah,
so.
I don't know.
And then that's when you'll make your goofy death rattle. If you get the measles. Oh, yeah. Okay, sometimes my comedy is a little left shark. The left shark Super Bowl that has become a meme for like just being spastic and out of sync. The left shark in the Katy Perry Super Bowl was just not quite doing the same thing that the right shark was, and just kind of looked like a kid that was like having some sort of spastic reaction inside the shark's suit. You saw that, right?
Yeah, I have to admit, I was mainly focusing on Katy Perry, but
yeah,
I didn't see
at it. The time.
I mostly focus on Katy Perry.
Yeah,
or Zoe Deschanel.
Yeah,
or Kristen Ritter. There's that whole thing where you know, like people on the internet compare the, you know, so many people, Zoe Deschanel and Katy Perry look alike, and then other girls that look like them. You know, just in case you can't get one, you can try to hit the other one up. Right. Don't hold your breath. You know who's got a better shot with Katy Perry?
Left Zoe shark. Deschanel.
Left shark. So at the end of the episode, I'm going to play another song by Ray.
Yeah. Are you actually going to check the levels so that I don't explode my eardrums?
Why don't you look
eardrums?
At the last one and see. The last week has Nomad.
Yeah.
A song titled Nomad by Ray and his band Corrupt.
Yeah.
So we're going to end this episode with that too.
So it's a folk group?
Yeah. Heavy metal folk group without the banjos and any of the heavy folk music. But it's all heavy metal. Heavy metal folk music without the folk music.
That's kind of sad.
Sounds amazing.
Well, it's just heavy metal.
Oh, okay.
I think we're going to wrap it up here.
So it sounds kind of like America?
Without the America. It's like if you cross America with Deep Purple and you take away America.
And you're left with Deep Purple.
Yeah.
It's a lot of silence, folks.
All right, I think we're going to wrap this up here. Jack's going to end up with the Left Shark Award. I'm going to give the Left Shark Awards. I guess we can't do it too much.
Oh, if you could hear the look I'm giving Charles. Because
Katy Perry is going to sue you if you say Left Shark too much.
Could happen.
All right, so thanks for listening to the Desperate Mothers Podcast. I'm CJ Watson.
And I'm Jack Fisher.
And I'm Jason Rice.
Hop on.
Thank you. show them a piece. Waiting for death. Pain. Has gone.